This is Dyslexic Design Thinking. For the past 25 years, Gil Gershoni has been the head of his own branding agency, Gershoni Creative. And one of the things he's passionate about rebranding is his dyslexia. In this series, Gil sits down with members of the dyslexic community for eye-opening conversations about the intersection of dyslexia and creativity, and what dyslexia can teach us about ourselves and the world around us. Today, Gil talks to Joe Fold, the founder and president of the political consulting firm The Campaign Workshop and the host of the podcast How to Win a Campaign. Enjoy.
Welcome, Joe. Wonderful to have you. You and I have something in common. You know, like so many dyslexic, we run our own businesses. Tell the folks a little bit about what do you do and why did you decide to become an entrepreneur?
Well, so on a daily basis, I do advocacy and political consulting as well as membership consulting for groups and organizations. And my company, The Campaign Workshop, does four main things. We do general consulting work where we're strategic consultants on membership campaigns and advocacy campaigns as well as political campaigns. Then we also teach people to be better advocates or how to run for office. And we do that through trainings and engaging people. Then we also, as far as services we provide, we create digital advertising and direct mail advertising. And we call this targeted communications campaigns that we run to help engage the general public around issues and around political campaigns. So a lot of different things. What's nice about this is I started this company in 2009, after running political campaigns for a long time, and I worked in the New York State Legislature for a short period of time and worked for other political and issue consultants and really decided, hey, this is something that I want to do. Came out of going to school here in Washington, D.C. and working for a political consultant as an intern and deciding, hey, this is interesting work. I really like the political side. I also really like the creative side. And it really gelled for me.
Amazing. I like to ask, you know, how have you found dyslexia as an asset to being an entrepreneur?
Well, so I think dyslexia allows me to see around corners in a way that someone who's not dyslexic can't, right? I'm very big picture focused. I'm focused around what is the next thing? What should I be thinking about next? Sometimes that can be an asset. Sometimes that can be a problem, right? And one of the things I'm able to do is surround myself with people, especially in my world, who are incredibly detail-oriented and really focused on the micro. And then I can be focused on the macro. And right. I have a lot of folks on my team that I partner with who are very good at details. Whereas I know that I necessarily am not, but what I am good at is thinking about what could go wrong? What is the problem with this? How do we move to the next thing? What are the big pictures? What are the ways that we could grow what we're trying to do? Those things I'm incredibly good at. The creative side, I'm very good at, but sometimes I am not so good at the details. So what's nice is one, dyslexia has allowed me very early on to realize what I'm good at and what I'm not good at, which I think, frankly, not everyone can own. And then the other thing dyslexia has been very good in teaching me is being open to constructive criticism because, you know, my learning in growing up was pretty hard. I didn't have it was not the most direct path to learning and academic learning that I got used to, like failure, making mistakes, not always like getting it right the first time. And it might've taken me the 10th time to get it right, but I wasn't afraid of that. And I think that often what happens is that people are afraid of failure, and I'm very lucky. And what I've learned from dyslexia is that I'm not afraid of failure. I've made a lot of mistakes and I've owned those mistakes. And again, I continue to try and learn from those mistakes.
Yeah. Beautiful. I can very much relate to that. And also to having a team and a supporting staff that sort of really can kind of bring their strength to the equations and elevate each other, you know? So it's something that we definitely at our agency very much embrace and celebrate, you know. Did you find that your dyslexia, I mean, did you share your dyslexia when you first started the campaign workshop? Was that something you talked about right out of the gate there?
So I wrote a blog post, I think, in 2013 that was, it's called, and you can share it in the show notes, Confessions of a Dyslexic Entrepreneur. So I think I've been, I was also on the board of the International Dyslexia Association, you know, early on in starting the campaign workshop. So those things I've been pretty open with, but I'll also say that early on in my professional career, I wasn't so open with it. And it took me a while to be comfortable with sharing, hey, here's this vulnerability I have and or perceived vulnerability. And how do I share that with folks? And there were, it got to a point in my life where I think part of it was, frankly, you know, getting married, having a very supportive partner, right? My wife, who was like, I was very open with her about my shortcomings. And like, once I was able to be comfortable with that, I'm like, okay, I have people who love me no matter what. I mean, listen, you always have your parents, and my parents were very supportive and really helped me navigate this at an early age. But as an adult, finding other people that were open and like happy to know me for all of me was super important. And it allowed me to be much more comfortable in sharing, you know, this perceived flaw in my life.
Where did you find that confidence? You mentioned your wife. I also have a very supporting partner, both, you know, at life, at work. Was that really the catalyst to sort of getting that confidence? Or was there other moments in your career that sort of really kind of stood out?
Wow, we're going to lay out on the couch here. It's going to get, we're going to get very deep. But like, I mean, honestly, it's incremental. It's finding your confidence as an adult and confidence in life took a lot of time for me. And I would tell you that I still feel like I'm learning and going through this and finding that confidence. It's not a straight line. And it's everything from going to summer programs at Landmark School when, you know, I was in junior high school and early in high school, right? That was super helpful to me. It was like understanding that it was okay that my grades were not the greatest in college, but that like I was able to find mentors and, you know, people who are like, hey, you have a knack for politics. Hey, you actually have a knack for the creative side, and like people who are able to foster that, right? I had a really great mentor in Richard Brodsky in the New York State Legislature, who was, I was his chief of staff for a year, and he was a fantastic mentor. There's so many, right? That like, so it was mentors, it was friends, it was looking at myself and realizing, frankly, that I was my, you know, own greatest critic, right? In both, you know, a positive way and a negative way, right? I mean, that I was the one who had to push myself to find goals and to achieve those goals. I was also the same person who was holding myself back from these goals.
Right.
And so that was helpful. And then, you know, finding, you know, stand-up comedy as a hobby in my like mid-30s was also a good, like, so all of these things were incremental in like, how do I explore, like, how to achieve the most that I could. Right. Yeah, and then, frankly, I'll also say in owning a business, coaching other people and coaching other employees allowed me to like explore that too and be like, all right, I don't have to be good at everything. I can have people who work with me who are amazing at things that maybe I'm not so good at. And that's okay too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that the whole mentorship is such an important part. You know, because you get to see people that's maybe a little ahead of you or maybe resolve some inner conflict or different sort of ways in the workplace that sort of gives you the confidence to sort of follow their leadership in their footsteps. And I also think that sort of exposing ourselves as humans, that we have strengths and differences, gives you confidence because you're not sort of hiding, you know, all of you. And I think that's such an important thing for our audience to know, that embracing your dyslexia and your community is part of what makes you so successful, right? Is just sort of allowing them to be who they are with you, which is what an empowering thing to do, right? I always love to find out, how do you manage people with your dyslexia? I mean, we're talking about different mind, different modalities, mentorship. What some of you as an entrepreneur, what some of the approaches you take to manage your team with your dyslexia?
So first, I think being very focused on core values, right? We have a pretty defined core values as a company. That has helped. It's something that I read the Zappos book, Delivering Happiness, early when I started the campaign workshop. And I also became a member of the Entrepreneurs Organization, which I was for close to 10 years. And both of those things were really helpful in me really thinking through a values-based company and thinking through how I show that. And, you know, so understanding what are the core values that I want to define and deliver as a company? What do I want to, how do I want to express that to my employees? Another part that we've really worked on was trying to have a no blame culture and learning from each other's mistakes, I think was really core to it and is really core to running a really great company and engaging folks. You know, and I mean, I could ask the same question to you, Gil. I mean, like, how do you do it, right? Because I'm learning every day. So like, that's part of it for me as a dyslexic is like owning that lifelong learning piece and knowing that I never stop learning and trying to get better. So tell me, like, could you answer that question for me?
Absolutely. I think that some of the things you were saying about just sort of bringing people together, you know, in the process is very much of it. I'm a huge believer and I love the book by Tony Hsieh, I mean, about creating a culture that really emphasizes and gives time and value to being a good player and a good person and serving your internal team and your clients and your community the way you want to be served. And it's amazing how much that turns the culture around, which is so important to what we do. But I think also really acknowledging that we are thinking in a different way, you know, and the way, you know, sometimes I think so fast and some of my teams needs to process this in a different ways. You know, sometimes we need to sit in different types of room because they stimulate us differently, you know, and so really making sure that we acknowledge that our differences is part of what makes us unique and strong and embracing it. And, you know, and it's on every level of the organization, but if as an entrepreneur and the founder, if you show them that you're vulnerable, that you're willing to sort of fail forward and you can talk about it and you can own it and ask them their opinion and, you know, include it in the overall plan, then it becomes all of us. You know, it's not just me or often we say that the work we do is not any one of us at the agency. It takes all of us on every level because the idea is one thing, but if you can't deliver it, it's another thing. If you can't leverage it, it's another thing. And if you can't do it again, then you're not in the business of it. And so it takes every mindset and every part of the team to sort of really embrace that.
I love what you said there. I mean, the first core value we have on the list is embracing change, right? And being, you know, learning like from what you do, learning from mistakes, not blaming, test, ask, explore, and collaborate, right? Like embrace change, be curious. That's the first core value that we have. And what I'll tell you again is, you know, as a dyslexic, that like not being afraid of change is very powerful.
As a dyslexic, you were hitting it before on big thinking and problem solving. Embracing change is the only constant. As a dyslexic, I never do it the same way twice. Well, because it's not as fun and it's not really the way my mind work, you know? So give me a real problem. If somebody comes to me with a small problem, it's like, don't bother me, man, but I want something big. But it learning to dance with your dyslexia makes room for that nonlinear thinking in a world that traditionally values more traditional thinking. So I love embracing change. And the more you're comfortable with it, the more you, you know, just dance with the reality of who we are and what we do, right?
Yeah, no, totally. And again, like, oh, I can talk about core values all day long, but like the other one is, the second one is communicate, especially when it's hard, right? So again, like having those hard conversations in life is just something that I've gotten used to, right? And, you know, whether that was mentors that were willing to say to me, hey, this could be better. You can work on this again, try again, right? That like not being afraid of like positive confrontation, positive like collaboration in that way, like, you know, positive conflict, like helped. And like, I got better on the seventh or eighth or ninth draft. I would say that I, you know, graduated college not being a very good writer. And it probably, you know, I was an okay writer and it took me a long time, right? Like to really keep at it to become a better writer. I still don't think I'm a great writer, but I think I'm better than many, but it's, you know, just building that over time.
Yeah. Well, that brings another thought is like, was politics an easy industry to be a dyslexic in?
what I'd say is like politics and advocacy. I mean, I would tell you like, you know, whether it's advertising, right? I do, you know, political and advocacy advertising. You do advertising, traditional corporate advertising, right? So like, I would say branding and corporate advertising, I'd be like, oh, that seems like a really hard place to be for a dyslexic, right? Whereas I'm just like dealing with, you know, politicians, you know, I mean, show business, this is show business for ugly people. I didn't coin that, but like, you know, that seems easier to me than like, you know, multi-million dollar brands. But in honesty, right, I'm also dealing with multi-million dollar brands, but on the nonprofit side. So I don't know. I can't really tell you. All I can tell you is I dove into this pool. I had really great like mentors that were like, it's okay, give it a shot. And I dedicated a lot of time to it. And anything that you dedicate time to and that you're passionate about, I really believe in time you will be successful. I think it is that I mean, one of the stories in politics that is vivid in my, you know, brain is that when I was 21 years old, 22 years old, I was working on a campaign in rural Indiana, and I was at a meat processing plant in rural Indiana. And I would see folks who would drive into that meat processing plant and they would back their car into the gate every single day and like then like drive and as the best place to drive out of that plant. And these folks had, I think, very good jobs, right? And were like very steady jobs, but it was a really hard job. And what I'd say is like, I'm very lucky that I now like get to support union folks who do that work on a daily basis. But like, I know from a daily basis that I am creating advertising is much easier than, you know, working in a meat processing plant or working in a, like there's lots of jobs that could be a lot harder.
Tell me a little bit about your work with the Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund and what the organization does.
Yeah. So I was really lucky. Brian Bond, who was a friend of mine, we worked together at the Democratic National Committee, became the executive director of the Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund. And he had called me on a Tuesday, this was in like 1998, and asked me, hey, would you come and do a training for LGBT candidates running for office? And the training was on a Thursday, and I got on a plane. And I've been lucky enough to do work to help openly gay candidates run for office for the past 22 years. And, you know, part of in our training work, I now do that in partnership with Martine Garcia, who runs our training program. And we have other trainers that we've worked with for a long period of time who help on that. And we've been really lucky to help elect openly LGBTQI candidates at the Gay, it's now called the LGBTQI Victory Institute. And we've been doing that now, you know, for forever. And we're lucky to do it. And we build the training in, we really engage folks who are potentially running for office and help them think about, you know, what it's going to be like to run for office as an out candidate. And it's been an amazing part of my life to work with lots of different candidates across the board.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that I so admire about that is that we are embracing each other's strength and differences as a large community. And it's not just about the dyslexic community or the learning differences community. It's about our identity. And to be able to see the work you guys are doing and supporting and creating inclusive sort of dialogue is so powerful. What was your childhood like before you were diagnosed?
I mean, struggling, right? It was the short answer. I, for a long time, you know, I mean, I was, it came up at a time where I would say that folks with a learning disability were broadly diagnosed as being dyslexic, right? Whereas now I think like folks with learning disability are broadly diagnosed as ADHD, and we can go down that road and talk about that too. But I felt at the time growing up, that was a struggle for my parents. There wasn't a lot of understanding of what a learning difference or a learning disability was. And, you know, so we were really lucky. It took a while. There were definitely some like failures in like figuring out like how to help me through my learning challenges. But in my early junior high school years, we found Landmark School. That was, I think, one of the first schools that, and I still went to public school during the year, but I went to summer programs at Landmark School. And it was really helpful in me finding a group of kids who were also dyslexic, who had, you know, similar learning differences that I did, and were, I was able to say, oh, I'm not the only one. That was really helpful for me, but it took a while. And, you know, I had like mediocre grades in high school, mediocre grades in college, right? But I also found things that I was passionate about. And in high school, I was always passionate about communications. I, you know, worked on, we had like a high school radio station. I interned at a local radio station for a little bit in high school. And then in college, and did some video stuff that I really liked. And then in college, I really got into political communications again, was able to find a political media consultant that I interned for and really fell in love with this part of that. And I was off to the races. I found what I loved.
When did it click for you that dyslexia could be a positive rather than a negative?
I mean, right before I went on this show. It's a positive, you know, many days it is a positive for me, right? And I think that I figured that out, that I had a unique way of thinking and problem solving when I started working on political campaigns in my early 20s, that I could come across and think about concepts and solving problems faster than other people. Mm-hmm. And that probably happened in my early 20s. I don't know that I like was as insightful to say, oh, it's my dyslexia, but I realized that, hey, you know, when I started like hanging out with other friends, other frankly entrepreneurs that were dyslexic, I'm like, oh, we share these same characteristics, you know, and like being on the board when I was on the board of the International Dyslexia Association, hearing those conversations about it. But yeah, I mean, I would say I first figured out, hey, part of this within me was different in a positive way in my early 20s, like after college. I don't think I quite realized it in college.
Yeah. I hear a lot that people associate dyslexia with the reading and writing and sometimes stimulations of sound and smell. But it sounds to me, and I think that we're in a very similar boat, that dyslexia is everything we do. It's not just, you know, it's the way we think, it's the way we see, it's the way we process. And speed is something that I've, over the years, learned to work with, because I found myself working with individuals where by the time I finished asking the question, I already knew the answer. Because I can process it very fast. And for them, they felt that that was a setup. You know, it's like, why are you asking me the question if you already know the answer? And I start to learn how to kind of regulate that in order to make it more inclusive, but also to slow my mind down in order to make room for their thoughts so we can actually arrive at a conclusion, you know, at the answer together, right? And I realized by doing that, it's really kind of continued to hone my relationship with my dyslexia and the gift of it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. I think that, you know, sometimes I would be like super enthusiastic when I could figure out the answer quickly, and maybe, and that was not always beneficial. And I had to, again, slow it down and make sure that, like, hey, I've always been able to figure out, especially now in the work that I do, that there are multiple right answers to a question, which is also something that has really been interesting. And so like understanding that and being open to that conversation and open to that like positive conflict of like, well, there could be multiple ways to approach this problem. Being open to those approaches has been, I think, part of like the gifts that I have, and just trying to steer away from what are the bad decisions, right? Because there are definitely a few bad decisions in politics and advocacy and the work that we do and in the creative work. It's like, don't go here, but this world is open and let's figure out some different options to take. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
What has been the reaction of the fellow dyslexic to your journey? I mean, as you said, you've been so involved in the community. How has it been received? And
I mean, I'd say on and off, right, in the community, to be honest, right? Okay. I mean, I would say that, like, you know, I think, like, being on the board of International Dyslexia Association, frankly, it's been a few years since I've been on that board, that was the first time I had, like, sort of professionally engaged in that world. And I, again, had a mentor, Hal Mauchow, who was the president of IDA at the time. And he's like, hey, you know, he had been my boss. And he's like, hey, I actually, you know, his son was dyslexic. And he's like, hey, you're dyslexic, why don't you come on this board? And that was like an amazing thing, right? So again, part of my growth there. But I mean, I think that what's been interesting is like running into fellow entrepreneurs in my work and other people who entrepreneurs, I've been able to, like, we definitely share experiences on the idea of navigating around corners and being able to think through things quickly. And yeah, and the reaction's been, you know, pretty good. Like, it's like, hey, we share those same problems and those same approaches to how to solve those problems.
Yeah. As we've talked on our podcast and others to dyslexic all around the world, every time you find another fellow dyslexic, it's as if you find a lost sibling, you know, because there's so much that is similar. And you're like, whoa, you also do that? I thought that that was my personality, but not my dyslexia. I was like, I do that too. And it's been very rewarding to sort of realize that we are among some amazing individuals that thinks very similar to us, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Where can people go to learn more about what you do and what's up and coming for you guys?
Oh, so one, they can go to the podcast, which we have this great podcast that we alternate between talking about winning political campaigns and winning advocacy campaigns. We're in the middle of a sort of summer to fall season where we have like really famous or famous to us, like authors and like people who like are influencers talking about, you know, politics and advocacy topics. And it's called our seven question series that we're in the middle of now. So, and you can find that at thecampaignworkshop.com and go to How to Win a Campaign. And our podcast is on there. Or wherever you get your podcasts, you can find How to Win a Campaign. So on Apple Podcasts or, you know, or Spotify or any place you get your podcasts. So check that out. We also have a blog that we publish weekly at thecampaignworkshop.com that really digs in to political membership and advocacy topics. And we have a new thing that we write about every single week. So check that out. I think those are all the places, but that's a lot.
Yeah, that is a lot. We'll make sure that all this information is also in the podcast notes so you guys can click and follow and stay in touch with Joe and his team. Just in closing, what have you learned about yourself through your dyslexia and all these experiences? Any sort of last thoughts to leave us with?
I mean, to keep learning, right? And not be afraid of learning. And that, like, I think one of the things that, you know, when I started realizing I was a dyslexic, that I had a sort of fear of learning that's like, hey, I can't succeed. I can't go through this. And then frankly, I started really loving books and I started really, you know, trying to find ways to sort of dig in and explore the world and make a difference in the world. And so I was super lucky to find both, you know, things that I really like to read and get into that, but then also like really just find things that I was passionate about in life and to chase that and keep learning and keep trying new things. And because of that, it's allowed me to really embrace my dyslexia.
Yeah, beautiful. For those of you who are interested in learning more about Joe and his work, don't forget to visit his website, campaignworkshop.com, and listen to his amazing podcast, How to Win a Campaign. I'm Gil Gershoni, and you've been listening to Dyslexic Design Thinking.
If you enjoyed our conversation today, be sure to subscribe to this series wherever you get your podcasts and follow along on Instagram at Dyslexic Design Thinking. You can also drop us a line at dyslexia@gershoni.com to receive our monthly newsletter and learn about our upcoming programming. Dyslexic Design Thinking is produced by Gershoni Creative. Until next time, be well.